Obsessed.
Hi, I'm Ash.
I'm Laura.
So I just also realized this is your pen and I put it straight in my mouth.
I'm so watched sorry.
And I went, ah! I don't need it anymore, so you can have it back.
Thanks.
Sorry. You're like, I'll burn it now. To be fair, I just rested it on my lip and then I went, no.
You're like a child, just like put everything in your mouth without me.
I just can't help myself sometimes.
That's okay.
So I was just thinking about, we were just talking about time differences and somehow that relates to time travel or something. And how when we lose or gain time, when we shift time zones, it's like time travel.
Yeah.
I remember seeing a bunch of memes that it's like a collection of really stupid people tweets. And one of the collections I saw, which just I couldn't believe happened, was that somebody genuinely got angry at a country that is time zone wise ahead of America, and how they didn't warn them about 9/11 because they genuinely thought that that's how things worked, which just hurts.
Oh my god.
But the my favorite thing that I've ever heard and read really was that somebody was asking about recommendations for food and they go, oh well, what's your favorite kind of thing? And she goes, I really like Caesar salads. And I've said Caesar salad since then, and that was about 10 years ago.
Oh my god. Caesar salad.
And they'd spelt Caesar totally correctly.
Oh my god.
But it was just my favorite thing that had happened ever.
I saw another one where, again, it was like a girl texting her boyfriend or something, and he was like, oh, what do you want for dinner? And she was like, oh, I want Caesar. So like S-E-E-S and then H-E-R salad. And he was like, what? And she's like, yeah, like, okay, that's not how it's spelled, but, like, do you know what I'm talking about? And he comes back, he's like, do you mean a Caesar salad? And he's like, she just goes, she's like, yes.
Wow.
I'm like, I mean, at least she tried. She was like, you know what I'm trying to say, right? But
yeah, at least she was aware she was wrong.
Yeah.
People that aren't aware and they're wrong are just the funniest things.
I think the whole, you know, like, blaming another country for not warning them about 9/11 is pretty specialist, so.
Oh, man.
You know.
How did you go with your Netflix homework that we put out?
I actually did it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. That was a big show.
So that last week, Laura had to watch The Night Stalker.
Yeah. Which is the new crime series on Netflix. And it was funny because I sent you a picture of it and I was like, you know, here we go. And you're just like, prepare to be triggered.
Yeah.
I fucking was.
Told ya.
It was bad. Like, I actually had to take several breaks through the first episode because I just kept getting really overwhelmed, but, like, I had to keep watching it.
Yeah, because it's also so much, like, you just want to listen to all of the story.
Yeah, it was so interesting. But you know what? The thing that really got me, which is, like, maybe a little spoiler, but it's not going to ruin the series. Like, there's so much in it. But you know how they were describing one of the crime scenes and one detail of it was he went in the kitchen, ate a bunch of food and then threw it up everywhere.
Yeah.
That really got me. Like,
well, that's kind of like, I think it was, is it BTK? Dennis fucking Rader.
Yeah, I think he did something
biggest dipshit.
Like
he like went and he would always, oh, that was,
oh.
That's right, that was his thing was, he's such a fucking idiot. So he's like, oh, I just don't even know how to describe how stupid of a person Dennis Rader is. His thing,
yeah.
You know how like serial killers have like this is his thing was that he would always have a glass of water.
He does such horrific crimes and that's what he came up with.
Yeah, just his thing.
Like my calling card is going to be I have a glass of water.
Yeah.
Jesus Christ. I would prefer that to the whole eating food and throwing it up thing, though. Like, that that really got me. And I think I even messaged you about this as well. One of the police officers that was in it, every time he spoke about anything, it like, you could just feel how much he was affected by it. And I was, like, nearly in tears watching it. But it was so good.
Yeah.
So good. It's only four
episodes. Did you see that? Did you see the really bad footage of the lead detective?
Yes.
Oh, isn't it great?
He's like sitting at the bar and he does like this dramatic turn and I'm like, oh, guys.
No, yeah, there's that. But there's also the, like, the from the original when the cases were ongoing, they were trying to figure out who he was.
Mm-hmm.
And the one of the cops, I wish I remembered his name, he's like trying to show the thing. He's like trying to show the sketch.
Oh, yeah.
And he's just like, he's obviously reading off a card that's like a little bit out of eye line of where the camera should be. And he's just, oh, it's so cute.
It's like, oh, you guys need some media training. But no, it was really, really good. I agreed with you. Like those, I think you talked about it last episode as well, the 3D creations of the crime scenes.
Yeah.
Friggin' amazing. Yeah. I haven't seen anything like that before. And it just, like, it really put you in it, which I think is why everyone was coming back and being like, it's too intense, we can't deal with it, because it really put you in it. Mm. And you felt like you were in the crime scenes and you were looking at the bodies and you were, like, so submerged in it. But that made it amazing.
Yeah.
So, and, you know, like, I think we're pretty seasoned people. Like, we watch a lot of really horrible stuff. We read about all sorts of cases in our research. We were both affected by it. So I think that's really saying something.
Yeah. It was great.
It was so good.
Oh, man.
Yeah.
So what else? Oh, I had to watch Big Mouth.
Did you do it?
I did.
Yay.
It was good.
Yeah.
I feel like I thought there would have been a little bit more progression than there was.
Yeah. I had the same thought. I really liked it. Like, I thought it was really funny, but it was sort of just more of the same.
Yeah. Also, I rewatched like season 2 and 3 thinking I was that far behind, but I'd realized I'd seen most of it. So,
oh, okay.
So I watched a lot of Big Mouth.
It's such a good show though. But yeah, except you know what? Like all the period stuff, I was just like, yep. Yeah, we do worry about that.
I really love the new hormone monsters. She's fucking insane. Missy's hormone monstrous.
Oh, yeah. The,
she's
the
just nuts.
One.
Yeah, the blonde English chick. She's fabulous.
She's so sassy.
Yeah, she's insane. It's great. Yeah. So what else have we? Anything else?
Oh, I watched another show.
Mm.
Yeah, it's called Surviving Death.
Oh, yes. I've seen that come up on like my recommendations and I keep moving past it. I'm not sure why.
Oh, you need to watch it.
Okay.
I'm going to talk about it a little bit later because I actually found my case from it.
Dope.
Yep. So I'll go into that a little bit later.
Maybe it's good I haven't seen it yet then.
I'm actually a little bit glad about it. I was worried I would come in and I'm dying to talk about it because it like changed my life a little bit, but it actually did. So I'll talk about that later. But I was like, oh, what if Ashley's seen it? What if she's like, oh yeah, I didn't really like it. I don't think you'd say that. It's a really, really interesting show.
Last week we also mentioned that you had been watching Unsolved Mysteries, and you said how, like, because you're watching like the really, really old ones on YouTube
from the 90s.
Yeah, that a lot of them have actually like. Bit, they're now sold, not mysteries anymore.
Yeah, well, because that's why the show's so cool. Like, they did these stories and they caught a bunch of people. Like,
yeah,
very cool.
So that's actually kind of my segue for my story. Ooh. Because I'm gonna be doing John List.
Okay, I'm ready.
Yeah. So, oh, I've literally written the first paragraph as that. So last week you mentioned how many of those unsolved mysteries have been solved. Oh, I'm a fucking genius. So I thought, one of the most famous crimes to be solved with the help of a binge-worthy TV show is John fucking List.
Oh, I'm so excited.
So I think a lot of people know a lot about John List, but there are some things in there that I didn't know. So John List grew up in a super religious home. Mm-hmm. His father and his family were devout Lutherans, and List was actually a Sunday school teacher for a time.
Side note, how many of our stories start with they grew up in a devoutly religious home?
I don't know.
Like a lot.
I guess it was the time.
It was
the most
time.
Of the famous serial killers and famous crimes are like from ages ago.
Yeah, that's true. But I just find it funny that a lot of our stories on a true crime and paranormal podcast start with, they grew up in a very religious household.
Yeah, religion can be a problem.
Yeah. Just an interesting factoid. Anyways, continue.
So he was in the army in World War II. He was well-educated, a functional adult after the army, where he went to uni and got a master's degree in accounting.
Mm-hmm.
In the 50s, he was recalled to active duty in the Korean War. In 1951, List met his wife, Helen Taylor, and her daughter, Brenda. Helen was recently widowed by an officer killed in action in Korea, and Helen and List met on base in Virginia. List and Helen get married in December 1951, and the whole family moved to California.
Mm-hmm. It's a bit of a nice story.
Yeah. It doesn't stay nice.
It doesn't.
For a few years after the war, List and the family moved around to different states where the accounting promotions and different jobs sort of sent them. List and Helen had three children of their own together, and in 1959, Helen was becoming unstable and a bit of an alcoholic.
No.
It would later be found that she was actually suffering silently with advanced syphilis.
Oh, God.
Yeah.
That's not good.
Mm. And she never told anyone.
Oh.
I don't think it's known if she knew or not.
Okay.
1960, Brenda marries and moves out, and the List family moves to Rochester. The family moves for a final time when List takes a vice president job at a bank in Jersey City in 56.
Mm-hmm.
This time, his mother Alma comes with them too, and they move into a 19-room Victorian mansion called Breeze Knoll.
Whoa.
Right? I've actually looked at pictures of it, and it's like, it's a bit smaller than you'd sort of think.
Okay.
Width-wise, but it's very deep of a house, if that makes sense. So, you know when you usually see, like, mansions and stuff like that in like English shows and all that kind of stuff, they're on these huge blocks and like they wrap all the way around. They look like fucking Buckingham Palace with how long they are.
Oh, and they have like wings of the house and stuff.
Yeah, so okay. This is a lot, I guess, more narrow, but it's longer, like it goes further back.
So it's like a big box
kind of. Yeah, it's kind of like a shoebox shape if you look from the short end.
Ah.
A rectangle, somebody would call that.
That's the one.
Yeah. Which I just found interesting, I guess, because I don't think I've ever really looked at many, like, American mansions that aren't, like, Beverly Hills kind of thing.
Yeah, that makes sense, actually, because when I went to Memphis, every block of land was, like, this rectangular shape. They didn't have, like, big blocks of land and things like that where you could do any house shape. So each house was, like, the same size on the same block of land.
Mm.
So that makes sense.
Yeah. Anyway, that's got nothing to do with it, but I just thought I'd mention that.
It's interesting.
So all is well for a while, but in 1971, List is made redundant when the Jersey City Bank closes.
Yeah.
List was so against revealing that he was no longer able to provide for his family that he did that fucking insane thing where every single day he got dressed as if everything was fine, sticking to his work hours. He would go to job interviews or spend his day reading the paper at the train station until it was time to come home, and then he'd do it all again every day.
I mean, that's kind of nice when it's like, oh, you know, I just don't want them to worry because I'll find something new and it'll be fine. But when you look at what they're actually doing, that's kind of mental.
Right?
Yeah.
I feel like it's just such a, oh, I don't know if it's like a 1950s thing or something, but I mean, people still do it now.
Yeah. I mean, if you follow very traditional values of like the man is the provider, that's his sole job, the woman looks after the house. If he's suddenly made redundant, he'll feel like a complete failure and he'll just be like, I don't want even want to tell her. Like, I'll find something else. It'll be fine. But I'm just going to pretend until I do.
Mm. Which is exactly sort of what his train of thought was.
Mm-hmm.
When the savings began to dry up, List began to skim money from his mother's accounts.
Yeah.
He encouraged his children to get part-time jobs. He pitched it was a way to teach them about commitment and responsibility, but really it was to keep their lifestyle afloat, but it simply wasn't working anymore. Yeah. List, due to some heavily disordered thinking, saw only two options. Put himself and his family on welfare and, in his mind, subject them to ridicule, which, as the man of the family, was incredibly shameful.
Mm-hmm.
Or he thought it best if, instead of welfare and shame, he sent his family to heaven.
Option one. Always option one.
Yeah.
Oh, boy. Okay.
This is where the religious bit becomes a problem. On November 9th, 1971, while his three children were at school, John List took his 9mm semi-automatic handgun and his father's 22 caliber revolver and shot his wife Helen in the back of the head. List then went to his own mother and shot her in the forehead above her left eye. List waited for his daughter and younger son to return from school. Patricia was 16 and Frederick 13. Once they returned home, he shot them both in the back of the head.
Oh, God.
He made himself lunch.
No.
I know, there's something just so creepy about that.
There is, like, you've just killed your family and you're sitting there being like, yeah, I could do with a sandwich. Like, really?
Yeah.
It's fucked up.
Imagine if for some reason in my this is so Here fucking stupid. If for some reason in my head, he goes into the kitchen, he's like whistling, because that's menacing.
Yeah.
Also, I don't know how to whistle, so for me that's like extra psycho. That's all I got. Anyway. I'm just like a soft breeze.
Yeah.
But he makes one of those sandwiches that's like ham and then he puts like crisps in it. That's what happens in my head. I don't know why. That's just what happens. Anyway.
Is there something particularly murdery about putting chips on a sandwich or?
No.
Okay.
It's just what I, in my head he does.
See, I was picturing one of those like full on like American family sandwiches where it's like, you know, pretty high.
65 layers high. It's like three club sandwiches put together.
Okay, not that high, but I'm just picturing like a like stacked, you know, ham salad sandwich, like decent.
I imagine it's like that processed bologna meat.
Yeah.
And like salt and vinegar crisp. Because it's just gross. Anyway.
And it's really gross.
Yeah. So after he made lunch, he then drove to his bank and closed both his and his mother's accounts.
Oh, that's not suspicious.
List then drove to Westfield High, where he watched his middle child and oldest son, John Jr., who was 15, play his final soccer game. Aww. List drives John Jr. home and, according to the evidence, shot him repeatedly as he tried to defend himself.
Oh, I'm so sad right now.
Yeah.
Yeah.
List placed the bodies of his children and his wife on sleeping bags and dragged them into the mansion's ballroom.
That's very creepy.
Mm-hmm. He left his mother's body in her attic apartment of the home. List then cleaned all of the crime scenes, removed his picture from every photograph in the house, wrote a confession letter, or really more of an explanation letter, to his pastor.
Mm-hmm.
List left the letter, turned on a religious radio station, and left.
It's one of the most horrible things I've ever pictured in my head.
Imagine being so calculating that you remove your photo from every photograph in the house.
I think that's the detail that gets me the most.
Right?
Where he's just like, I'm going to just remove myself from this, literally, from all the pictures, and then just leaves.
Mm. So now, just like the letter from the hottest hell in the Axeman of New Orleans case, the letter is so intriguing in its entirety that taking bits and pieces of it just sort of doesn't give the full effect of how calculated, lucid, and horrible his thinking is. So I'm just going to read the whole fucking thing.
Here we go. Story time, kids.
I apologize for any of the names in this that I get wrong, because okay. There's a few. Dear Pastor Ray Winkle. I think it's R-E-H-W-N-K-E-L. So Ray Winkle is what I'm going to call him. I am sorry to add this burden to your work. I know that what has been done is wrong from all that I have been taught, and that any reason that I might give will not make it right. But you are the one person that I know, while not condoning this, will at least possibly understand why I felt I had to do this.
We're not off to a good start.
No. One. He numbers them.
Oh my God.
One, I wasn't earning anywhere near enough to support us. Everything I tried seemed to fall to pieces. True, we could have gone bankrupt and maybe gone on welfare. Two, but that brings me to my next point. Knowing the type of location that one would have to live in, plus the environment for the children, plus the effect on them knowing they were on welfare, was just more than I thought they could and should endure. I know they were willing to cut back, but this involved a lot more than that. Three, with Pat, which is the 16-year-old daughter,
mm-hmm.
being so determined to get into acting, I was also fearful as to what that might do to her continuing to be Christian. I'm sure it would not have helped.
Oh, God.
Four, also with Helen not going to church, I knew this would harm the children eventually in their attendance. I had continued to hope that she would begin to come to church soon, but when I mentioned to her that Mr. Jutes wanted to pay her an elder's call, she just blew up and said she wanted her name taken off the church rolls. Again, this could only have an adverse result for the children's continued attendance. So that is the sum of it. If any one of these had been the condition, we might have pulled through, but this was just too much. At least I'm certain that all have gone to heaven now. If things had gone on, who knows if this would have been the case. Of course, Mother got involved because doing what I did to my family would have been a tremendous shock to her at this age. Therefore, knowing that she is also a Christian, I felt it best that she be relieved of the troubles of the world that would have hit her. After it was all over, I said some prayers for them all from the hymn book. That was the least that I could do.
Really? Now,
right. Now for the final arrangements. Helen and the children have all agreed that they would prefer to be cremated.
Oh, did they?
When did they have this conversation? Please see to it that the costs are kept low.
Oh my God.
For Mother, she has a plot at the Frankenmuth Church Cemetery. Please contact Mr. And then he gives a contact name.
Mm-hmm.
He's married to a niece of Mother's and knows what arrangements are to be made. She's always wanted Rev Herman Zenhander of Bay City to preach the sermon, but he's not well. That's in brackets.
Nice.
I'm also leaving some letters in your care. Please send them on and add whatever comments you think appropriate. The relationships are as follows. Mrs. Lydia Meyer, Mother's sister. Mrs. Eva Meyer, Helen's mother. And Jean Stifert, Helen's sister. Also, I don't know what will happen to the books and personal things, but to the extent possible, I'd like for them to be distributed as you see fit. Some books might go to the school or church library. Originally, I had planned this for November 1st, All Saints Day, but travel arrangements were delayed. I thought it would be an appropriate day for them to get to heaven.
Oh, okay. Well, there you go.
As for me, please let me be dropped from the congregation rolls. I leave myself in the hand of God's justice and mercy. I don't doubt that he is able to help us, but apparently he saw fit not to answer my prayers the way that I hoped they would be answered. This makes me think that perhaps it was for the best as far as the children's souls are concerned. I know that many will only look at the additional years that they could have lived, but if finally they were no longer Christians, what would be gained? I'm sure many will say, how could anyone do such a horrible thing?
Yep.
My only answer is it isn't easy and was only done after much thought. Pastor Mrs. Morris may possibly be reached at 802 Pleasant Hill Drive, home of her sister. One more thing. It may seem cowardly to have always shot from behind, but I didn't want any of them to know, even at the last second, that I had to do this to them. John got hurt more because he seemed to struggle longer. The rest were immediately out of pain. John didn't consciously feel anything either. Which I don't know if he's a doctor, but I don't think he knows that.
I don't think that's accurate.
Please remember me in your prayers. I will need them whether or not the government does its duty as it sees it. I'm only concerned with making my peace with God, and of this I am assured because of Christ dying even for me. This is... this bit gets me.
Oh.
P.S. Mother is in the hallway in the attic, third floor. She was too heavy to move. John. That's how he ends the fucking letter.
Oh my God. You know what? Like, we've had some pretty horrible things on this podcast, but I think that's one of the most horrifying.
It's just so, like, you just want to slap him and you be like, do. Are you, what?
It actually really frightens me how organized his thoughts are.
And how, like, sure he is that this was the right thing. That's so much worse than somebody knowing that they're doing something fucked up just because they have the urge to do something fucked up.
Yeah.
Somebody genuinely convinced that he's saving his family by murdering them.
Oh, my God. And that's the thing. Like, even if he had that rationalization and he was like, I need to kill my family because I can't give them a good life. The fact that his letter is so organized, like it's not rambling, it's not frantic, he's not emotional, he's not freaking out, that's cold.
Yeah.
Like, oh my God.
So, the family was murdered on the 9th of November, right?
Okay.
Well, they weren't discovered until the 7th of December.
Oh, that's not good.
List had planned this so much that he had sent notes to the children's school, part-time jobs, and associated clubs saying that they were going away in North Carolina for a few weeks visiting their maternal grandmother.
Mm-hmm.
List also cancelled deliveries to the home like mail, milk and newspapers. He also left the lights on so it looked like someone was home. When the light bulbs began to burn out from being on for a month straight, neighbours called the police.
Mm.
Police conducted a search of Bree's Knoll, but they never entered the home. They only looked around the outside of the house and saw nothing suspicious. They assumed the Lists had stayed on longer on their trip away, potentially.
Mm-hmm.
They're like, they said they were going on vacation. They're just there a little bit longer.
Yeah, if we go in there without proper premise, we're going to be sued.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The police finally entered the home when the drama coach of Patricia, the only List daughter, spent time outside the home calling for her. She had missed a lesson. So this is when everything was sort of resuming.
Mm.
After that, they'll be away for a few weeks.
Yeah, they should be back at school. They should be back at work.
The police were convinced by the drama coach to enter through an unlocked basement window. The bodies were eventually recovered in the ballroom along with List's letter. A nationwide manhunt ensued, but all photographs of List had been destroyed. They had hundreds of leads, but none would provide any answer. The family car was parked at John F. Kennedy Airport, but there was no evidence to confirm List had gotten on a flight. The case stayed open for 18 years.
Yeah, I mean, he just vanished.
Right.
And he was gone for a month before they even started searching for him, right?
Yeah.
Ugh.
In the first years of America's Most Wanted airing, the List family murders were featured on Season 2, Episode 66. The episode aired on the 21st of May, 1989.
Mm-hmm.
It was the oldest open case that they had ever done and featured the details of the crime and an age-progressed clay bust sculpted by forensic artist Frank Bender.
Oh, that stuff fascinates me.
Right? Imagine being called a forensic artist.
Have you ever watched, like, videos on how they do it and their process and stuff?
No.
Clever people.
Oh, I'm sure it would be so fascinating.
Yeah. Anyways, back to the story.
So Frank consulted photographs of List's parents and worked with a psychologist to create a psychological profile of him too.
Yeah.
Frank was so sure of his abilities that he added a pair of glasses to the bust. The glasses were an added touch because Frank and the psychologist were adamant that List would not be vain enough to wear contacts, that List would wear glasses different from those he had worn during his failure period.
Yeah.
And that there would be a way for him to hide but also appear more important than he was. It would be thick, dark frames. Right?
Can't argue with that.
Yeah. The age progressed bust appeared on the show and was so close to List's actual appearance that one of List's neighbors, who placed an anonymous tip to the America's Most Wanted team, said he had been living in Denver, Colorado and Richmond, Virginia, where he remarried, started a new life and career as an accountant, and his name was Robert Peter Clark.
Oh my God.
On June 1st, 1989, just 11 days after the airing of the episode, John List, aka Robert Peter Clark, was arrested. He was wearing the exact glasses from the forensic clay bust.
Damn, professionals, you did good.
Right?
Oh my
How
God.
How good is that?
Oh, wow.
List stuck by his alias, adamant that he wasn't John List, for months after his arrest. But on the 16th of February, 1990, after matching his fingerprints with his military records, List confessed to his true identity.
Take that, fucker.
Right? Police discovered that List had traveled by train to Michigan, then another train to Colorado. The name he stole was the name of a college classmate. He joined another Lutheran church, even ran a carpool for the shut-in members. During a gathering, he met an army clerk, Dolores Miller, and married her in 1985. They moved to Virginia, where he would eventually be arrested 4 years later.
I mean, that's probably one of my worst nightmares. Like, you meet someone, you fall in love, you get married, you have kids, and then it turns out they murdered a previous family or something.
Yeah.
And you're just like, I don't even know who you are.
Especially, like, with his first wife, I think they'd only known each other like a year. Like, you only really know someone a year or so before you get married.
Yeah.
Whereas now people are, you know, together for
10 years.
Yeah, like, whatever. Tanner and I had known each other 5 years. It was our 5-year anniversary when we got married.
Yeah.
And it's just like, imagine if, like, in a year's time I find out he had a whole nother family and, like, killed them all.
Tanner, that's do you have another family?
He doesn't. We were 18 when we met. He didn't have time.
Okay. Yeah. See, this is why I wish I met, like, I mean, it could still happen, I guess, but, like, marrying someone from high school, you're like, I've known you since you were a child.
Which is also sometimes an issue.
You've seen me in the worst.
Yeah, exactly. They've seen you through all that shit.
Ugh.
Yeah. When asked why List didn't take his own life, he said he believed suicide would prevent him from going to heaven where he wanted to see his family again.
Oh, okay. So murdering your entire family is not a sin, but if you kill yourself, like, okay, yeah.
Yeah, you just can't murder yourself. That's bad.
Just fucking religion.
When religion is taken too seriously, bad things happen.
Yeah, there is good religion, but this
that's what the Crusades were. Too serious.
Describing the Crusades is just a little too serious.
Yeah.
Jesus.
Even during an interview in 2002 on the program 2020 with Connie Chung, List said he believed he was still going to go to heaven. List also during another interview stated that had the travel plans of his mother-in-law had not been disrupted by her illness, she would have been his sixth victim, which is probably what the delay was in his letter, was that she was coming down, but she'd cancelled a trip because she was too sick, so he had to change everything around.
How inconvenient for him.
I know.
Poor guy.
April 12th, I think everybody knows.
Just making sure.
April 12th, 1990, Liss was convicted of 5 counts of first-degree murder for the murder of his mother, his wife, and his 3 teenage children. In court, at sentencing, Liss straight out denies any responsibility for the murders. He says, "I feel that because of my mental state at the time, I was unaccountable for what happened. I ask all affected by this for their forgiveness, understanding, and prayer." Which, fuck you, dude.
What a fucking joke.
Right?
Like, no. Sorry.
So, Bree's Knoll was destroyed by arson in August 1972, mm-hmm. 9 months after the murders. Mm-hmm. Destroyed along with the home was the skylight in the ballroom. The skylight was a signed Tiffany original.
Ooh.
Worth $100,000 at the time. So $624,000 now. Money that would have kept the family afloat for fucking years.
Oh my God.
Right?
Oh, what a fucking waste. Like, okay, yep. Don't never murder your family, but the fact that he did it because of money problems and there was money literally above their head.
Yeah.
Oh.
A stained glass window in the ballroom. Well, and it was a skylight. Like, it's not huge either.
That's what I also don't get. I mean, did he not ever sit there and be like, let's just sell the house that is fucking massive?
There's 5 of us. Maybe we don't need a 19-bedroom mansion with fucking... Let's downsize a little bit and just say it's easier to manage. Like, exactly. There's... Yeah.
Even if they downsize to a 5-bedroom house. Like, from a 19-bedroom house to a
10-bedroom house. That's still going to be a lot cheaper than a 19.
Ugh.
You know?
I hate this so much.
And the fact that gets me as well is he was an accountant.
He was an accountant. Oh my God. No, his letter is basically just screaming bullshit because he's just like, well, if I can't live in my 19-bedroom house, I don't want to live anywhere. I'm going to kill my family and fuck off.
It's not even that. If I can't live in the house, then I don't want to live anywhere. It's just like, it just doesn't make any fucking sense. I can't even, yeah. Oh,
I think he just wanted a new life. And he's like, I'm done being a dad. I'm done having a family.
Mm.
Later, gators.
Bye, Felicia. After 18 years, 5 months, and 22 days, Liss was sentenced to 5 life sentences to be served consecutively. March 21st, 2008, with pneumonia while in prison custody at a medical center in New Jersey, John Liss died. Enjoy hell, you absolute psychopath.
Amen to that.
And that is the story of John Liss. And the Liss family murder.
I'm so angry.
You're welcome.
Oh my God. I can tell. I'm going to get like a stomach ulcer or something from doing this podcast. Stop being so proud of that.
No.
Okay.
I enjoy your pain.
Yeah, I know you do. All right. Fast typing. Oh God. I'm just digesting.
I'm writing, I enjoy your pain.
Yeah.
In little musical notes.
Cute.
Because I sang it.
If I could sum you up in one sentence, that would be it.
Mm-hmm.
I enjoy your pain.
But it's got to be sing song. I enjoy your pain.
Yay. There's our second theme song.
Yes. That's how it should end.
Yeah. I got to admit, like, I do... Okay. Side note, I do really enjoy when people like comment on our Instagram or something and they're like, this case fucked me up, or like, what the hell was that? I'm just like, you're welcome, guys.
Thanks, I hate it. You're welcome.
Yeah, exactly. On this podcast, you hating it is a good thing.
Mm.
Unless you hate us, that's a little different.
Then
but...
fuck off.
Yeah. But also, like, maybe.
Fuck you, Denise.
Maybe you
Doris.
Her name is Doris. Remember.
Whatever. I don't care.
Where are you getting Denise from?
I don't know.
Anyways, okay. My case. So I mentioned earlier that this week I watched a show called Surviving Death. And if you haven't heard of it, haven't seen anything about it, it's about death, funnily enough. But it was
really interesting. Never would have guessed.
Yeah, funnily enough. It was really interesting, though, because each episode covered a different topic. So like there were 2 on mediums. There was 1 on near-death experiences. There was just all sorts of different topics. I don't want to spoil it too much, but... really well done, very investigative. So they sort of have the contention in it that something happens after death, but they really explore everything. So they do science, they do religion, it's very, very good. But in the episode about mediums in part 2, I found this case and I had to cover it because it's a little bit of a follow-up to a previous case I did. So for those of you who listen to us, particularly episode 13, where I talk about ectoplasm.
Oh shit, she's getting specific.
Yep. if you listen to that episode, I talked about Marthe Baroud and her not so convincing ectoplasm shows. If you haven't listened to it, definitely recommend listening to that because it's just really messed up. But I came across this case that they talked about in the show because it's the most convincing case of materialism mediumship ever recorded. So this one's actually convincing.
Oh shit.
Yeah. Which I was like, I think we need to get into this.
Bring it on.
So this is the story of Franek Kluski.
Bless you.
Great name. That's not even his real name.
Liar.
So, well, his real name I literally cannot pronounce. I can't even try. His birth name was Teofil.
Bless you.
T-E-O-F-I-L.
Mm-hmm.
I don't even know how to do the surname, which is M-O-D-R-Z-E-J-E-W-S-K-I.
Modzajewski.
Bless something us. Like that. Well, he's from Warsaw in Poland, so he's Polish. He was born in 1873. And pretty much like from an outsider's perspective, his life was pretty standard. So he had a happy family life. He had lots of good friends. He served in the military before he then found a stable job working in banks. So largely unremarkable. But yeah, anyway, so people basically thought that Franek was like this standard dude, right? From an outsider's perspective. But those closest to him always knew that there was some weird shit that just always happened around him. So, some of the things that would happen was that he would have furniture moving around him, whether it was in his apartment, someone else's apartment.
He's fucking Matilda.
Pretty much. There would also be like weird noises, so like footsteps, papers rustling, typewriter keys when there's nothing there. Just people would be like, he'd walk in the room and then just weird shit stuff. So yeah, strange noises. There would also be strange lights, so like little orbs or little lights that would sort of hover around him. Also sometimes like light hazes or spots or something.
I just want to put out there for anybody that plays D&D, this just sounds like a list of mage cantrips. Please somebody confirm that for me. Cause all I'm thinking of just a bunch of cantrip cards in D&D. They're like all basic little spells that your character can do, like without needing to do anything.
All right. Okay.
They're just like the most basic, like everybody has them no matter what level they are.
Okay.
And so that's like all
standard
I can.
Standard shit.
Yeah. It's great. Sorry.
Anyway. It gets a little bit weirder in a second. But yeah, this stuff actually sounds quite cool. Like imagine just walking around and like little lights follow you and stuff. Also little fires would sometimes like come out of his mouth.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Sometimes on his fingertips.
Tiny dragon.
He would also affect compass needles. They would just go haywire anytime he was around.
Hmm.
That's always freaked me out. Electrical thing.
He just has magnets in his pockets.
He's like, oh my god, guys, magic. It's like, yeah, you have magnets in your
If pocket. That was the only thing that happened, that would be very funny.
Yeah, it would be. But remember, this is a convincing one, so we're yes. getting there. he would also, this is a long list, by the way, a lot of things would happen, so this is taking a while. Electrical things around him would go haywire, so like lights would start flickering, things would turn on and off. It was actually really funny. One of his work colleagues was like, yeah, we could always tell when he walked in a room because the lights would just not work anymore. And they would just freak out and we'd be like, oh yeah, he's arrived at work. Which I'm like, what a nonchalant attitude to have about it. That's really
the lights
funny.
Haven't flickered today. He's late.
Yeah, it's like, oh man, is he sick or like, you know, is Franek okay? But yeah, that's how I picture it in my head anyway. He would also react really badly to storms. So like he would get really agitated before the storm would come. And then when the storm was happening, it was as if an electrical current was passing through his body. So his toes and his fingers would start stiffening. And he claimed that like his whole body would tingle and he would sometimes have blue flames coming out of his fingertips.
Not out of his mouth this time?
Not out of his mouth for this one. So apparently it was normal little
So
fires.
Lightning fire is fingertips, but regular fire is tongue fire.
Well, he had regular fire out of his fingertips too, but It was the blue fire was just fingertips, which I'm like, cool.
Cool.
This one I actually had to Google because I didn't know what it meant. But a lot of people claimed that he would have really strange smells coming off him, like more than just like BO or something. But people would claim that he smells like ozone, which I was like, what the hell is ozone? So I looked it up and it's a form of oxygen. So oxygen, I think, has three particles. I'm either going to get this right or I'll get it backwards. I think oxygen has three particles of oxygen, whereas ozone only has two. Or is that the other way around?
O2.
Okay, so oxygen only has two.
Ozone I was waiting for you to do like some sort of math and I'm like, I'm just going to say that and see what happens.
I would not have gotten it because I read this very quickly and there was these had a lot of random research I had to go do. Okay, so
ozone, yeah, I believe ozone is more particles than it is.
Yeah, it's one extra particle. So ozone has three, but it's actually toxic to humans. Mm-hmm. So kind of toxic. So we obviously have the ozone layer, which is above Earth. But there's another layer of it, which
is the one with the big hole in it.
The one with the big hole in it, yes. We don't want that hole. But there's another layer of ozone that's closer to where humans are, and it's quite toxic if there's high levels of it. But I don't know, it got very technical, but apparently it's related to the smell that some people can smell before a storm hits. So, you know, when I do this all the time, I go outside and I'm like,
Marge, the rains are coming.
Yep. Basically me. But it has a certain smell, and a lot of people describe it as different things. So some people say it smells like chlorine or metallic or sweet and pungent, which is how I describe it. Like it's kind of a sweet smell. Some people say it smells like an electrical spark, which I'm like, interesting. Or that it's just the smell that comes before a storm hits. But that's sort of what he would smell like a lot. And people would be like, you smell like ozone. Some other things that people claimed was that he would smell like alcohol or floral scents, even though he wasn't drinking, he wasn't around them. It would just sort of radiate from his body. And they would check to see if it was coming from him because it would be emanating from like his armpits or something. It's kind of gross, really. But I mean, if he's smelling like flowers, like cool. But if he's smelling like ozone, it's like, dude, what have you been doing? He would also... okay, this one was cool. So some people would claim that they could see his outline even when he wasn't in the room. So they would be like, yeah, I saw Frantic like the other day, but it was like 3 a.m. and he was at home. So my thought is maybe he's astral projecting because he claimed he could travel without a passport just by thinking about it.
Why would he need a passport if he was just thinking about it?
Well, because...
if he wanted to astral project and he needed to take a passport. Sorry. I'm sorry. That's just a really funny sentence.
Imagine if there were, like, astral passports. It's like, excuse me, where are you teleporting to? It's like, just over there. It's like, do you have a passport? But no, I mean, like, this is the 18... I mean, he was born in 18-something, but, like, this is the early 1900s. I don't think he really had astral projection, but... That's what it sounded like to me.
That's cool.
Yeah. He would also...
I'm just thinking about a passport that kind of hovers a little bit and glows.
Yeah, just like, ooh.
Yeah.
Oh my God. There would also be like cloud-like presences around him, and he would have frequent and random illnesses. So like he would be totally...
Same.
Well, yeah. Stress, man. But basically he would be like totally fine, and then suddenly he would come down with like a fever, he'd be dying, and then like a few hours later he would be fine.
Interesting.
Just like frequent and random, and it was very, very weird. What's interesting about Klusky, though, which is part of why this case is so refutable, is that he did everything to avoid his medium abilities. So he never advertised them, he never did shows, he never made any money off them. He hated it, basically. Apparently he was religious, and he sort of felt like these abilities were against the church, and he was like, no, I can't be doing these things. But everyone around him saw it, and they were just like, dude, you're magical. He also didn't want to encourage it because he felt that working in the military and working in the banks, it would spoil his reputation. So he pretty much hated it. But in 1918, Klusky began a very brief career as a medium, but only ever did scientific experiments. So he didn't do shows, he only worked with science. He did these experiments from 1918 to 1925, which is only 7 years. And then pretty much after that, he had enough. He was completely worn out and was like, I don't want to do it anymore.
What sort of experiments were they? Like, oh, you're going to get into that. Okay.
Seances is the short answer.
Oh.
So in 1980, finding this case was a little bit difficult because there was all of the information was really fragmented. So I've tried to organize it. One website had it in sort of stages. So that's how I framed this, but it's a bit kind of everywhere. So the first section is from 1918 to 1920. So this is the early stage of his seances. They were mostly carried out at Kluski's apartment or friends' apartments. The beginning of his abilities in these seances included knocks, sounds, large pieces of furniture moving, ghostly touches, so like you'd feel like a hand on your shoulder or something, glass shattering, automatic writing seances, which is pretty cool. For people who don't know what that is, it's basically, it's like what was her name? Patience Worth did. So she would go into a trance and something would take her over and she would write from a spirit's perspective. So he would do that. And they had sort of controls employed at this point, but they were pretty harsh. So they were like, they put a whole net over him so that he couldn't do anything. He would be tied down in, this was more in 1922, but apparently they did it earlier as well. They had him completely naked. they were just like, you're doing something.
For science.
Yeah. There's a lot of nudity in science, I've noticed. But in these seances, he would also have a red light. So the whole thing would be done in red light, which was not typical because usually seances are conducted in complete darkness, which is a bit interesting. But he had red screens with lights coming up so you could actually see what was happening. But it's pretty cool.
Hmm.
The next phase is 1920 to 1921. So Kluski serves in the army as a volunteer after the Bolshevik attack on Poland. After that, the seances did continue and they started becoming more intense. So Kluski went to Paris for laboratory experiments at the International Metapsychic Institute, or the IMI, which is a very cool place and it still exists to this day.
That's great.
The guy who ran that institute, his name was Gustave Gilly? I don't know. It's French, G-E-L-E-Y. But he's a very famous physician and a psychical researcher who you may remember from the Marthe Broad case because he also researched her. He also conducted seances in Warsaw, Italy, In Warsaw, Italy, Austria, Florence, and Vienna, because he basically was like, I'm going to go visit my friends. And they all wanted to see it too. So he's like, yeah, okay. Seances on the road. And yeah, throughout this time, the phenomena in his seances started to elevate. So he would now have heavy objects flying through the air, like whole tables and whole like chairs just being destroyed everywhere.
Wow.
There would also now be human phantoms that would start to appear and lights would start to fill the room and fly around. And below I actually took it's quite a long quote, but it really depicts what I'm trying to say.
I just read a whole fucking letter.
Oh, right. Okay.
You'll be fine.
Yay. But yeah, so this illustrates it really well. So the screen suddenly rose in the air. I think they're talking about the red screens that would light up the room.
Right.
The screen suddenly rose in the air and suspended there began to approach the participants in sequence and to light in detail apparitions of four faces, which appeared consecutively. Between the appearance of these faces, one could hear rustles and knocks and see various little lights. The first observed apparition was formed shapelessly as if out of a piece of white fabric in which the eyes and nose were irregularly located and thus barely resembled a human face.
Picasso.
Yeah.
Picasso, but as a ghost.
It very well could be. When those present demanded a clearer face, one immediately appeared, a better formed but giving the impression of a cardboard cutout. This next sentence may be a little bit racist. The third face seemed to be Chinese, similar to the two previous faces. One could see the slanting eyes and abundant black mustache, but it did not at all look like a living human face.
Okay.
Yep.
That's some weird connections, but all right.
The fourth face, a woman's face, illuminating itself with the screen, held by a hand invisible to those present, approached each participant as requested, as did previous ones. Some participants had the impression that the face kept changing. First it was the face of an older woman, then suddenly it became young. This face showed itself to the other participants very clearly from every side, so that all those present could distinguish its features in detail. After the apparition of the faces there appeared, first close to the medium and then above the heads of the participants, very intense lights achieving the size of a hen's egg and at times shining with a brilliant green silver light. From these lights floating in the air came what looked like shining smoke accompanied by a very strong smell of ozone, which the participants smelled until the end of the seance. Some of the participants were touched by what seemed like a shining flowing stream, which over a period continued to shine on the hands, hair and faces which it touched. The little fires, which kept appearing in increasing numbers, started to travel through the medium and come out of him. The screen, previously lying motionless on the table, suddenly turned bright side up, and against its background there appeared first a small hand, followed by a pair of intertwined hands. These hands looked like the hands of a dummy, but with the temperature of a human body. Yep.
What do dummy hands look like?
I mean,
mannequins. Aren't they meant to look like normal hands?
Well, yeah, pretty much. I do go into this a little bit more later on. They were body parts rather than full apparitions, but anyways. The little finger on one of these hands was partly broken off and hung on a thread. These hands allowed the medium and the participants to clasp and shake them and even pull them towards themselves. However, when they all firmly clasped the hands and the medium cried out light, the hands dissolved without a trace and after a moment appeared again against the screen. So that was very wordy, but basically that has all the elements I'm trying to talk about. Like there were people, there was... The big thing that comes out of these seances is that there was a lot going on. So like it was really hard... Like they talk about how the first early ones weren't really documented, but it's because there was so much they were looking at. Some of them say that the human apparitions actually were in the first phase of seances, but they were so busy looking at the lights and shit that they didn't even see them. So...
Interesting.
Very interesting. So now for the final period, which was 1921 to 1925. This period of seances is the most clear and intense phenomena that was observed. Kluski would now enter a deep trance during his seances. The apparitions would become clearer. And this was kind of difficult to understand, but from what it sounded like, there would be an apparition, but it was like three apparitions in one figure. So things were kind of getting blended together and there were multiple faces and things would transition and it was all very odd, to say it mildly. Military figures would also appear that would often be friends or family of people who attended these seances. Christian or spiritual phantoms or figures were appearing as well, but they would be self-illuminated, so like glowing figures and... stuff like that.
Every time I think of glowing figures, I just think of that one where Mr. Burns is glowing and they think he's an alien.
Oh my god, I love that. He's like, I bring you love.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's what I'm picturing too. That's actually really funny to think about, but moving on.
You're welcome.
There was also stronger light activity. So now instead of like a couple of little orbs, there were like lights flying everywhere. There were like nebulas and stuff and just very, very cool. So... I also found a list of other various phenomena that would take place in the seances, but I didn't know which era these would fit in, so I kind of just did another master list of other shit that happened. So, the lights that were mentioned, sometimes they'd be globes, sometimes they'd be like a nebula that's kind of everywhere. They would be various colours, so like white and green, and sometimes it would even appear as like a fluid that was spreading up the medium's arm.
Ew.
So like he was glowing under his skin. Lights in various shapes, so like crosses, columns, streaks, clusters, and flames would just be flying everywhere. The smells we talked about before, but they would also happen in the seances and included smelling disease, which is just gross.
Yeah, okay, fair enough.
Also animal smells, rotting flesh, body odor, fruit, nature, incense, and disinfectant. The disinfectant one was really interesting because apparently that was directly related, or kind of all the smells were directly related to who was appearing. So if it was like someone who was really sick in the war or something, they'd smell disinfectant as well.
Hmm.
So it kind of related.
Interesting.
Very interesting. There were a lot of apparition stuff going on. So there was ectoplasm, which would sort of come out and then turn into shapes. There were animals. I didn't get a lot of detail on the animals, but it was mainly squirrels that would kind of run around.
Fuck yeah.
Yep. And also an ape-like creature called a... Okay, I got to get this right. Pithecanthropus, which is like a primitive form of humans. So it was like... They had like long hair, they kind of look like monkey humans, and they just kind of smacked their lips together. So they didn't really talk, but it was like this primitive human that would appear. There would also be partial materializations, which were things like body parts, artificial looking apparitions. So like they were made out of cardboard or paper or something. Distorted sizes. So things would be too small to be human, but they would... It'd be like an adult's hand, but it just looked very small, or things like that. There would also be dark phantoms, so like shadows and stuff, light phantoms, which were self-illuminating. And this one was confusing. So it said that accessories would manifest on the phantoms. So for example, if there was like a man that appeared, someone would be like, oh, who is this man? And the more they paid attention to him, he would like grow an army uniform or something, or they would grow a particular thing that they were holding, or
right, like they would expand.
Yeah, but it was like the more they paid attention to it. So then once someone was like, oh, that looks like an army uniform, it would fully appear and you'd be like, oh, we now have a soldier here.
Interesting.
Very interesting. Okay, so now there are two things that also made these seances very credible. The first is who would attend them. So the groups would consist of no more than about 6 or 8. So it's not like these are big audiences or something. But they were made up of Kluski's friends, but also some of the most respected members of Polish society. So this included famous artists, theatre directors, writers, scientists, academics, business people, politicians, military personnel, psychical researchers, and medical professionals.
Right, so that's a mixed bucket.
Yeah, but it's like, it's all of these very high up people. So it's like, why would they lie about any of this? That doesn't make any sense.
Yeah.
According to the show Surviving Death, some of the notable people who would go were Charles Richer, who was a Nobel Prize winning physiologist, Gustav, who was director of the IMI, and Camille Flammarion, who was a famous astronomer.
Cool.
So they all went and saw it and were like, yeah, that shit happened, which is kind of crazy. Now, this is the big reveal, right? So this is why the case was even in the show, apart from the fact that they went to the IMI and they were talking about it. But the other reason why they're so credible, and like I said, this is my big secret, is the creation of what's known as the Kluski hands. So what they did was when they would hold the seances at the IMI, they would have Kluski and he would be tied down, he'd have his legs tied and everything, and they would sit a big container in front of him that had boiling water and melted hot wax on top of it. And what happened was that these figures of hands and feet were somehow created out of the wax. Yeah. So keep in mind, like, by the time they're doing the IMI seances, it's like the best of the best. So that's when all the politicians and the scientists are coming in. There would be 6 to 8 of them. They would all be sitting around him. They would be watching him. You know, they have no reason to lie, but I think they have about 12 of them, 12 of these figures. There were more, but they were very delicate, so some of them got destroyed. But you can actually see them. In the show, they show you these figures, and they're so bizarre to look at because they're obviously like hands and there's a foot in there. So they're called the Kluski hands, but there's a foot as well. But they look like adult hands, but they're so small. So they're like...
I'm gonna Google it.
Okay. So I think they said they're about the size of a 5 to a 10-year-old, but they have like wrinkled skin and they have, you know, like strong... Do you see what I'm talking about? So they're kept at the IMI now. They're very, obviously very special, but there's photographic evidence. There's so many famous people who came and watched these and like respected members of the scientific community, and they all saw it happen. So what they said was that these like smoke figures would appear behind Kluski, and then it would sort of reach over into the wax, and then it would create this mold, and when they pulled it away, there was just this mold with nothing in it. So it's like, where the fuck has that come from?
I hate it.
It's so cool though. Because they've also...
I hate it in the best way.
Yeah, pretty much. So they actually designed the experiments to avoid fraud as well. So the two things they were worried about, the first was that maybe he made molds prior to the experiments and brought them in with him. But they put a special dye that they didn't tell him about in the wax, which was blue. And it had a very specific chemical makeup in all of the figures that dye was found. So it's not like he made them and brought them in and was like, oop, oh, guys, look, it's a figure. The other thing they did was they were, of course, worried that he was just like, you know, in the dark red room. He was just sort of sticking a hand in or a foot in or something, which, first of all, doesn't make sense because these figures are miniature. But also, like, they watched him the whole time. So, like, he was strapped down. He was also apparently, for these, he was in a trance as well. So he's, like, in the chair slumped over. He's, like, barely conscious. And somehow these figures are being made. So in the show, there's a quote from the guy who works there, and he says, look, the only plausible fraud account that I can believe is that all of those people lied and were like, yeah, we saw it when they didn't, but these are such respectable people. It just doesn't make sense.
And also out of that group, there's definitely got to be at least one of them that would get their rocks off on not being part of the everybody say it happened kind of thing. He'd be like, nah, nothing happened. You're all like, you know, there's always that one person.
Oh, yeah.
But
particularly like military personnel or politicians or something, they could be like, no, I'm a
private. Yeah, politicians are full of shit.
Yeah. So they could be like, you know, pragmatic people being like, oh no, like, I don't believe in any of this, but none of them said anything. They were like, no, it happened. Like, I saw it. So, yeah, very, very interesting. And if you, I'm sure we'll put a picture on the Instagram, but if you want to go look at it, you can see the pictures there. You can watch this show, which is absolutely brilliant. They show you all the figures. They come out in all the boxes from a safe and everything. But there's also photographic evidence, which if you want to look up, way more believable than the Matt Burrard stuff. Like, I mean, her pictures just look like chewed up newspaper. But these ones, like, there's one particular I really like. And this was an animal apparition, but it's like a full-on bird on his head. You can see the feathers on the wings. You can see everything. You're Googling it, aren't you?
I will be. Keep talking.
And, you know, some of his pictures you sort of look at and you're like, okay. Like, there's one where apparently it's a woman that's appeared behind him. It just looks like they put a cloth on his head. Like,
yeah, I did see that.
Yeah. So some of them you can sort of be like, yeah, maybe. But some of them really did look legit. Like, definitely more than the Mud Burrowed stuff. But, yeah, that's pretty much what I have for you. I'm trying to think of this.
That is so cool.
Which one?
The bird one.
Yeah, the bird one. Like, I mean,
also, when you Google Frank Kluski, it comes up with noodles.
Did you type in Frank or Frenic?
I think I wrote Frank.
I did that a few times.
Frank's noodles come up.
Yeah, so that was a very wordy one. But the thing that really got me about this was that, first of all, he didn't encourage it at all. Like, for most of his life, he was like, no, don't talk to me about it. But he also, that was the other thing, he pursued writing and journalism as a career after the bank. So he really enjoyed writing. He refused to ever write about it. Like, he worked for newspapers and stuff and they were like, oh, can you write about being a medium? He's like, no. He's like, I flatly refuse. I don't want to. He also wrote like plays and stuff. And
if it, like, my brain just goes, if it is fake, that's such a big brain play.
Absolutely.
To be like, I'm just going to flat out fucking deny it.
Yep.
But I'm also going to play into it. But also, no, I don't want to talk about it. No. Like, you can't.
He's like, I'm going to be famous for 7 years and that's it. That's all I want. But yeah, he's considered by the Institute.
So why was he in that show, Surviving Death? Did he die?
Yeah, he's dead now.
Yeah, but like,
okay, so
did he die and live again?
Well, I'll talk about the show a bit.
That sentence didn't make sense, but it does at the same time.
Okay, so the show itself is all about exploring the possibility of an afterlife. So I at first thought that it was going to be about dying, but it's not. It's about all different things. So
I think that's probably why I didn't watch it, because I thought it was going to be about people that have like drowned in a pool and come back and said they saw the other side or some shit. Like,
the first episode is that.
Right. That's probably why I stopped. I probably, you know how Netflix just plays part of the, yeah, like the intro? I probably started watching that and went, I don't want to watch this.
Yeah. So each episode was about a different aspect of death. So like, one of them was afterlife signs. So you know how people, you know, will be like, oh, that's a bluebird, that's my mother, or, you know, messages from the great beyond.
like the bee in Bridgerton.
Yeah, I haven't watched that.
It's very good.
But yeah, so it sort of covered all different things. The first episode is about near-death experiences. So that's people who have died and come back. And but they also talk to researchers who study this stuff, and they talk about the science behind it. And, you know, like, for example, with that, one theory that people had was that near-death experience.
Yeah, so the first episode is near-death experiences.
Mm-hmm.
Mediums part 1 and 2 is episodes 2 and 3, signs from the dead, seeing dead people, and then reincarnation.
Yeah, so that's what I mean. Like, cool. Each episode is a different topic. The reincarnation one is spooky. Like, ooh, they actually have kids who are believed to be reincarnated, and they go talk to them, and they're recalling shit, and they're identifying pictures, and
that's cool.
It's very, very cool. So that is my official recommendation for the week. If anyone wants something cool. My warning, though, is if you're prone to existential crisis, maybe don't watch it.
Because... Oh, no, that's me.
Yeah, I mean, if you can watch it...
I'm still going to do it.
Oh, yeah. If you can watch it analytically and, like, listen to the stories and the science and watch it like that, you'll really enjoy it. But if it's just going to give you, like, panic attacks about dying... Like, I've told my sister not to watch it because she has anxiety about that stuff. So I was like,
I don't worry about dying.
No, but nah. This actually, like, watching the show actually really impacted me because I think I want to be a palliative counselor now.
Oh shit, you've just changed.
Well, yeah, I mean, I've looked into palliative counseling a few times now, from, you know, reading about it, looking at documentaries, and I've always had an interest. But after watching particular parts in the show, which I won't spoil it, I have such an interest in it because there is something so special about, you know, being there for people at the end of their life and supporting the families and things like that. But I just watched it and I was like, this is what I want to do.
That's like cool.
Yeah, it is pretty cool. Like, there's a whole part of an episode where they talk about deathbed apparitions, which, ooh, happens a lot. So
yeah, I don't have any sort of fear of dying or death. My existential crises are more like just the absurdity of, like, the chair and stuff like that. Like, just,
oh yeah, like, how did it come to be?
I once when I worked at Flight Center, I was sitting on the floor of the back office crying my eyes out because I didn't understand how the fuck a printer prints.
Oh my god.
Like, I do, but it's like, it's just ones and zeros. How does it? It literally broke me.
Okay, I think you'll
that's
be
why fine. I like jellyfish so much. They don't make any sense.
I thought that would make you hate them.
No, they're my favorite.
Oh, okay.
Because there's literally no way, there's no reason they exist. 98% water, no brains and no anus. I think it's great.
That is very, very cool.
Yeah.
There's just nothing to argue with. It's just like, it just is.
Yeah, it just exists. That's why I love them so much. Yeah. There's no reasoning. There's no real evolutionary reason. They're just there. And yeah, they're annoying and they're see-through and I love them.
They're just there to be like, fuck you, I'm going to exist this.
They don't have eyes. Like, they just... There's just so much. They don't have anything. They're just gelatinous with somehow poison on their legs.
They don't care about your science. Like, fuck you guys.
They don't give a shit about anything.
Oh, that's like that. All I'm thinking about now is the start of Bee Movie, when they're like, there's no reason why a bee should be able to fly, but it just does.
Yeah.
Like, that's great.
Yeah, yeah. What's my recommendation station this week? Well, I did just, I haven't finished it just yet, but I did find it's actually, I think, a couple years old, and it's called The Bletchley Circle, San Francisco.
Bless you.
Yes. Yeah, so it's about these women that worked in World War II that were brought in as code breakers.
Oh.
And then they go to the US because their friend was killed and somebody else is now killed in the same sort of way. It's like they're chasing serial killers, but they're breaking their codes. And then it's like these two women from the UK and then these two American women that were, three of them are code breakers. One of them was a mechanic.
Okay.
But she's still, you know, very like code oriented kind of thing. And yeah, and they break code and they find patterns and stuff like that in serial killers and they solve crimes and stuff, it's just very good. And it's 50s, 60s.
That's kind of very cool.
Yeah. So that kind of fashion. But then it's also kind of like there's a lot of that like sexism where the women shouldn't be doing that kind of stuff, and they're very much like, fuck you, like, yeah. I was in the war too, you dumb cunt, sit down, like, yeah. It's just, it's so good.
I'm also very, very smart, and I'm gonna keep doing what I'm doing.
Yeah, I'm definitely smarter than you, like, sit yeah. down.
Oh, I love that shit.
Yeah, it's really good, it's really good. So that's my, I'll put that on your list.
Oh, okay.
Because there's only, it's a limited series.
Is it on Netflix?
Yes.
Okay, cool. And you have to watch Surviving Death.
Yes. What else did I watch? Oh, have you watched Sabrina? The Chilling Adventures of Sabrina.
I watched the first season.
Okay. Because this isn't a recommendation station. This isn't a recommendation. Like, it's fine. It's, I like it for its production quality because it's just a bit odd.
Yeah.
And I appreciated that. It's absolutely ludicrous. It's mild trash, but it just has such an interesting quality. You know, so you know when you watch, like, if you've ever watched Riverdale,
yeah,
how it's modern, but everything's slightly out the wrong date. So it has this weird eerie feeling, like, yeah. like they'll be wearing like petticoat,
yeah, like and drinking jackets milkshakes. And,
yeah, but yeah. then she's got like an iPhone.
Yeah, it's this weird like merge.
It's this weird where time isn't a real thing, and like.
Yeah.
Like they're like the leader of a motorcycle gang, but they're in year 9 or something, some yeah. bullshit, you know what I mean?
It's
like
just stupid.
Time isn't a real concept, which is the same sort of thing here.
Yeah,
it's got that weird eerie kind of feeling because nothing quite sits quite right.
Yeah,
but it's also absolute ludicrousness because like there's Lucifer and hell and witches and all these weird demons and stuff like that, but they've completely finished the entire show run.
Mm.
And it's one of the most, it was great up until the last, like, 15 seconds.
Oh, no.
I don't want to spoil it.
Okay.
But it's just, I literally tweeted at Netflix, because it's a Netflix original, and I just said, what the fuck was that? Like, I was just so, oh, man, it's just, like, everything was fine, and it would have wrapped up, and then just, that it's like the last, if you've watched it, you know, okay, I'm going to spoil it. Skip ahead 10-20 seconds if you don't want to hear this.
Okay.
So Sabrina dies
okay.
at the end, right? Which that's kind of what it was building up to. Yeah, sure. Okay. She's in this heaven thing reading a newspaper or some shit, a book, whatever. And then her boyfriend shows up behind her and I'm like, oh, you know, Nick's magic. He's also part necromancer, whatever. He's probably there to say, hey. He goes, she's like, how are you here? And he goes, I took a swim in the Sea of Sorrows. It has a wicked undertow. He killed himself to be with her. And she's like, oh, that's nice. Like,
oh my God.
I flipped out. And then it ends, them making out on a couch in what's meant to be like heaven. Okay, the spoiler's
that's,
over now.
That's so shit.
I was so fucking mad.
That, yeah. Okay, see, all I'm thinking about now is like Riverdale season. Whatever the season it was before this new one's come out, which I'm refusing to watch.
I haven't watched any of the new one yet.
Okay.
Or possibly even the one before that, I'm not sure.
Oh, yeah. I'm basically refusing to watch the new season because I hated the last season so much because it's like, you watch some shows and there's like the right amount of absurdity where you're like, this is completely nuts, but like I'm loving it. This just went so far that it didn't make sense. And you're just sitting there and you're like, what about this person? They didn't even cover that. Or like, this physically couldn't happen. This plot doesn't make sense.
Yeah.
I couldn't come back after
where
that.
Where was it?
When was it?
Like what happened?
Oh, so
what was the plot arc?
They end up with like this cult comes to town and they're like harvesting organs from people. And then it's all.
Is that the goat head one?
Yeah.
Yeah. It's and like then, it's a weird drug gang that's in the nunnery and all this.
Yeah.
Shit.
And then
yeah.
it's like a hospital now. And then Cheryl goes there and her yeah. girlfriend has to break her out. And it's just like, I'm watching it. I'm like, this show used to be cool. And now I'm just annoyed. You know? Yeah.
Well, the whole thing of that was, I think because I read the Archie comics when I was younger,
okay,
that it, I knew it was stupid, but also I remember that, like, being the arc that sort of happened, where yeah. it didn't really make that much sense, but then they had to sort of make it have a little bit more sense for TV, because they obviously skipped a bit more, because it's a comic book.
Yeah.
So it wasn't as noticeable, I guess, but it was meant to be like Satanic Panic and D&D was the yeah. big thing, and then they sort of mixed it with drugs and all that kind of. I still can't get over the fact of, what do they call their drug?
Friggin', oh my God.
Whiz Fizz. No, that's an actual
lolly. I keep thinking Pixie Sticks, but it's not.
That's also an actual candy.
I know. It's because it's in those tubes.
Yeah.
Oh my god. Okay, don't tell me when you find it because I'm going to see if I can think of it.
Oh, that's all right. You won't. You won't.
I'm thinking I might break something in a minute, but oh my god, it's like, you know when it's like right there? What is it?
Jingle Jangle.
No, I wouldn't have gone.
Yeah, I knew you wouldn't have because we were talking about fizz and pixie sticks. We weren't going to go there.
No, I should have gone like, oh, Christmas, jingle bells. Oh, yeah, jingle jangle. Yeah, no, I wouldn't have gone there.
Yeah. I agree that it's really stupid and absurd. And yeah, I get that. And there was some points where Sabrina does the same thing. But I guess there's a little bit more leeway in Sabrina because it's magic.
Yeah.
Like, but there was one episode where Tanner walked in. He's like, what the fuck are you watching? And I was like, honestly, this episode is just not at all to do with anything else that's happened so far, so I don't know.
I hate it when shows do that.
Yeah. But anyway, I was so upset about the finale of that. So if you want to bitch about the finale of Sabrina with me, please message me on Instagram and or Twitter.
Yeah. You can have a little group session. Oh, just talk about your feelings.
Yeah, please.
Yeah.
Well, I guess that's it for that. While we're talking, the Instagram or my Twitter, if you want to talk about Sabrina, at Catastrophe IRL for Twitter, and the Instagram is just at Dead Obsessed Podcast.
The Facebook group's the same. Yeah, Dead Obsessed Podcast. We have a few new members.
New members.
Shut up! I have talked a lot this episode.
Go.
We have some new members. Which, hi guys, thank you for joining.
Hello.
I want to start doing a few more interesting things on the Facebook group soon, but if you're in the Facebook group, invite your pals, because it'll be awesome with the members we have, but I want to start doing some polls. I want to start asking some questions.
When you do stuff on the Facebook group, tell me and I will specifically download the app and just use it for that and then delete it again.
Okay. Yeah, because Ashley's a strange one and she's not on Facebook. Well, you're on it.
I'm on it. I just don't ever engage with it, really. No.
Unless you're sending me something weird.
Yeah, just because I don't want to open WhatsApp on my computer because then there's a notification on my phone that WhatsApp is open on my computer. So I just use Messenger.
That's really annoying.
That's about it. Yeah. That's the extent of my Facebook use.
But yes, engage with us, please. We love talking to you.
Yeah. Yes, definitely. Come hang out. And next week we are going to be doing a Valentine's themed sort of episode because it'll be coming out the day before Valentine's Day. So we're going to do... unspecifically, I'm not even sure what they are yet, but it will be Valentine's related.
Yes.
Don't ask me too many questions, I have no idea.
Yeah, but you know, we'll give you a heads up now just in case, you know, you're in a relationship and you've completely forgotten and you need to plan something. So
yes.
Welcome guys,
you've got a week and a day.
Yes,
go buy them flowers and submit to capitalism. I don't fucking know how this works.
I'm single, so I don't have to participate in that.
Oh, there will be really good chocolate sales on the next day, though.
That's what I celebrate every year.
50% off chocolate?
Absolutely. Like, last year, I actually went on a first date on Valentine's Day, which was... you know what? We were sitting there and we were trying to, like, arrange a time. We were trying to do, like, a normal day, you know?
Yeah.
Non-Valentine's Day. And we sort of both just sat there. We were like, do you have Valentine's Day plans? And we were like, well, no. Like, this is...
That's
I'm talking
cute.
To you. And he was like... do you want to just go out on Valentine's Day as a first date? And I'm like, why not? You know? And he rocked up with a rose for me. Which was
oh, that's adorable.
Yeah. Because I said no one had ever bought me flowers before. And I freaking love flowers. They make me deliriously happy. And he was like, I'll bring you a flower. And he had this beautiful rose for me.
He stole it from the garden next door.
He bought it from a store. Because he told me about how he didn't know how many to buy. He was like,
that's really cute.
Well, he was like, it's Valentine's Day, so usually you do like a bouquet or something, but he's like, this is
red roses are also expensive.
They are, and it was beautiful. I really loved it, and I was like, thank you.
There you go, guys. There's a tip.
Yeah, just buy me any flower at all, and buy any girl any flower at all, we'll just be ridiculously happy.
Yeah,
doesn't have to be expensive.
Yeah, just make sure they're not allergic to it first.
Yes. Or have a weird fear about it.
Fear about flowers?
Yeah, some people, like, I know someone who's terrified of sunflowers.
Okay.
Yeah, because I think it was like, I forget the story now, but they were like, yeah, they just creep me out. And I was like,
is it because they follow the sun? Because that is creepy.
Possibly.
They do move.
But then when there's no sun, they face each other. Did you know?
Can you imagine if they're just like yelling at each other?
Yeah, just like, what the fuck are you looking at?
Fuck you, Carl. Anyway, guys, thanks so much for listening. Do all the things we said. Go onto the socials. Share us with a friend. All that kind of stuff. I've been Ash.
I've been Laura.
Thank you. Bye.
Bye, guys.